All right, guys, thanks for joining today's episode of Let's Get It Podcast. Got Steve Suda, Luke and Jemmy of Avenue Capital Partners with us. Yep. I know, Steve, you're out of Boston. Luke, you're working out of Florida and whatnot, but you guys are partners. And you guys do some – I love following you guys' stuff on Instagram, man, because, like, you guys – I know you guys always say, I need to post more on Instagram, but, like, stuff you guys do post is quality stuff. The projects you guys buy, I mean, I'll let you guys get into it, but I guess if I had to sum it up, you're basically buying, you know, these houses, dumping – $2-3 million into them and then selling them for $4-7 million. And it's just nice high end type stuff. I've seen some of the bathrooms you do, some of the walk in closets, some of the cool high end stuff you're doing. So I like following you guys, and I appreciate you guys coming to my mastermind this past week, and definitely wanted to have you guys on the podcast before you head out to back to the East Coast.
So
what give the people a little bit more idea of like what you guys do and how you do it.
I'd say over the past, 2 years or so, we've really kind of honed in, and our bread and butter has been luxury single family, gut renovations. But we're, you know, starting to get into some ground up construction. But primarily we're operating in a pretty, you know, high end luxury single family area.
And the thing is like people hear gut renovations and they think, oh, maybe they're taking out some flooring and maybe moving some cabinets. You guys are like busting down exterior walls, like lifting roofs up and
we're basically, it would be faster for us to build a lot of these homes from scratch. But due to, you know, strict zoning requirements and things like that, we're kind of, you know, forced to really.
It's kind of around like the Harvard campus a little bit.
A lot of the stuff it kind of has to be a renovation. You're not allowed to build from scratch with the same guidelines that, you know, of the existing footprint.
Yeah.
Because in Boston, I mean, how dense everything is. Every project, every property is basically non-conforming, right?
Right.
So if you used to go and take that down to its shell and
your footprint's less.
Your footprint's gone. And then now all of a sudden you want to rebuild your setbacks, side yard, rear yard. Mm-hmm.
Back yard. So as long as you kind of keep that foundation and most of the structure, you can still remove.
Yeah.
A sidewall to be like whatever. Yeah. I mean, I've seen ones where like you guys are filming from the inside and like literally the whole exterior wall is like gone.
It's gone.
You're sitting in like what was an old living room and now you're looking out and you see the street and there's no window, no wall, no doors or anything. It's gone.
Yeah. The one we're doing on Broadway in Cambridge right now, when they're MIT, that one is the exterior wall was 6 feet off. It was swaying in the wind. So but we took that down to its shell, but that was built in, 1890?
Yeah.
Something crazy like that. So it would have been easy to blow that up and just start from scratch, but per the permit.
Easier, but then you lose a lot of square footage, and now you lose value there too, right?
Yeah, and honestly, it's more time-consuming too.
Right. To restore them.
Yeah, it would be so much faster to knock it down and start from scratch because, you know, we're most of the time supporting the structure so that we can – keep it in place.
Or would it though, because all the permits and stuff you'd have to get?
Well, I'm saying
from a construction perspective.
The actual construction. But the actual project though is going to take longer at that point because of the permitting and all that stuff.
And then what you're, you know, technically going to be able to build would probably be much smaller.
Right. So all of that put together just makes no sense.
It turns from, you know, being a really good deal to just not a deal at all. Like you can't.
Like what would you be looking at? Like if, so like a project that you were doing, like do you have a, is it like 4,000 square feet, or how big are these houses that you're typically doing?
Yeah, I'd
say. And if you tore it down and rebuilt it, are you then able to build like a two, is it kind of cutting the square footage in half?
No, 75%? There's not really like a standard playbook for what we can do. I mean, the average renovations we're doing right now are anywhere between 3,000 to like 6,500 square feet on an existing structure. And then like our Broadway one, the existing structure will be a single family, and then three townhomes connected off the back going up four stories.
So, but like that 6,500 square foot structure you're doing, if you tore that down, how many square feet you think you'd be able to rebuild?
We wouldn't be able to rebuild it. Yeah.
Would it be, but like what you could build, is it like 2,000 square feet would you be capped
per at? Per the zoning, it probably 4,000? Would be something like that, given the front yard setbacks, the side yards that we would have to meet to make the actual structure conform to the existing lot size. Yeah, it would be a third of that. So, but that house is incredible, that one. I mean, it's Avon Hill of Cambridge. You know, property just sold for 15.9 down the street from there. So the economics on that, we bought that one for 2.4, and you know, our as complete appraisal came in when we acquired it at 6.25. So
how are you guys sourcing deals?
I mean, we just have now, it's you know, we've been in the game for a good amount of time that people call us and they know what we're looking for, right? And that's been one of the biggest conversations between the team now, is actually we need to control the lead generation. So Luke and Caitlin been doing a big focus on building out the systems to actually start getting the leads funneled to us and controlling those leads so that we have were the first ones to see them. We could actually disposition those to another developer if we wanted some quick cash, or now we have better margin because we got the lead before someone else
hit the market. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because we get deals sent to us and there's been seven eyes on it already.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because Boston's such a small, like, whoever's doing business, you know who they are. Yeah. You know what I mean? That everyone's seeing every deal. So it's like, if it's a good deal, you have to pounce on it quick, but then it's also the competition. So how can we find those deals ourselves and be in control of that asset, right?
Yeah.
To see what we want to do with it.
Which is, like, you touched on this earlier, I think it was either today or yesterday, that we kind of operate under the model of, like, with the brokers that we do or work with, it's like you basically eat what you kill.
Right? Yeah,
like,
sure.
if you bring us a deal, you'll have a shot at the back end, right? Yeah. And that kind of retains a lot of our...
It incentivizes them. And yeah. If they know you guys are going to close and do a deal, and then they get a double commission on it. Especially with you guys, like, they might push it more, you guys, way. Well, I guess all the stuff you're building, no matter who's... Or all the stuff that you guys are remodeling, no matter who's buying that deal, is it all getting remodeled? Or do some people just buy these things that you're competing with just to live in them as is?
Oh, I mean, there's a fair, like... I don't know. I'd say it's a pretty fair mix, but like for the most part, the stuff that we're buying is not.
I mean, we got beat out on two deals we were looking at last year. We got beat out by owner occupied.
Well, right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's like, I mean, the broker would love it to go to you guys instead of that person if they know that, hey, there's going to be another swing at this a year from now or whatever, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like we're paying an average of 5% on the back end, you know, and on a $3 million transaction, it's a good payday. Yeah. So there's definitely incentive for them to send us deals. Yeah. But that being said, like, We still, you know, we still feel as though it's a huge need for our business to be able to scale what we're doing and to review more deals. Like we need to ramp up the lead flow and stop relying on brokers to bring us deals and kind of put together the systems to have those deals come to us directly. Yeah. And then we can, you know, we can select the broker we want to use on the back end.
Because we own the construction business as well. Yeah. So for us, I mean, the construction is really where our overhead is, right? The development side doesn't really have overhead at all. The construction, which, you know, six people on the team, anywhere from Caitlin's COO, project administrator.
It's the same thing with us. And on the Spalding Capital side, like, again, what would be, quote unquote, the development side. I mean, there's really not much overhead there right now as there is, but the property management side, which is kind of like the construction side, that's where all the overhead is.
We talked about it yesterday with, you know, our construction business. We want to just be able to operate our own deals from the construction side.
Yeah.
But then you get to a point where, like, you do have a little bit of a down market and working for clients is...
Yeah.
Miserable.
It's always an option. You have it in your back pocket.
If and you need it.
You know, but I think we were like pretty much in line with the way that like you view your project management company really just is a way to kind of mitigate your risk with your development company, right? Yeah. And we kind of view it the same way where it's like our construction company, like, it's really like my bread and butter. Like it's how I really came up with, you know, I'm the construction guy, but it helps us timelines, costs. Like, I mean, we're building these homes for like on average, like we're about $210 a square foot, like is what our cost is. Mm-hmm. Right. Which is like very good for the product that we're putting out.
Mm-hmm, sure.
You know,
It's an impressive product. It looks beautiful.
Yeah. And speed is like, you know, so us having that kind of skin in the game of like owning both.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's going to move as fast as we are because we own the back end. You know,
what I kind of like too is you guys showed like the progress in some of that content too. So like you can kind of see some of the steps you're taking to be like, okay, it's not also not just like a pretty front. Like it's well done.
Yeah. You were showing we're showing the framing, we're showing the eye joists, we're showing. And that's what also at the same time, we've built such tremendous relationships with the inspectors in these towns because you start to see, once you actually work for other people, you start to see like, oh shit, we actually do a phenomenal job. Let's take a step back and be proud of what we built. Yeah. Because, you know, a lot of these inspectors are like, you guys are overbuilding.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. But for us, it's like, it's a liability thing. Plus it's being proud of what you built. Your name's on that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? So when people look, like we walk through other people's stuff, we're like, you put that out?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's also it's similar to like when you have your units where you're kind of selecting what level, like, you know, you have your gold and, you know, like bronze pack. Like when you do that, right, we also, you know, the subs are, we're not really playing around with it too much where it's kind of like when we buy a house, we, you know, the design package is a little bit different, but the expectations for, you know, what we're expecting for quality is the same.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're always, you know, we're not saving stuff. We're not like trying to reuse.
Yeah,
like
it's
literally just like, it's a system and like, we're okay with spending a little bit more to kind of keep the repetition there.
Yeah. Well, that's what Luke puts me in check, because I want to go in and I want, you know, stuff's like 180 years old. I'm like, we find a way to keep that. He's like, get it out. He's like, go buy your own storage and throw it in there.
They got to keep me in check.
But you see, it's like, you've seen a house built in 1870 and you're like, they don't build them like that anymore. Yeah. Like those houses were bomb-proof.
Right.
You know, so we're coming in, it's like, and you know, you got to modernize it, but it's like, but with our design elements though, we follow, you see a lot of guys building very ultra-modern. But you're kicking out a lot of potential to buy a pool, right? Because not all the people like that. Our stuff sells, it moves, people love it. And our design team, and you know, we're putting out a traditional product that has brings real world, new world elements to it. So, you know, we think we got a good system.
Yeah.
You know?
These guys good with the distance on the microphone?
Yeah.
They're good.
That's fine. Cool. Okay, cool.
So how'd you guys decide to get started? You just drive by a Cambridge 5,000 square foot house one day, we should buy that and let's see what we can do with
it? No, it definitely
we only have like 30 minutes here with you, so we'll try.
We'll give you the
I'm a little late. The next meeting is scheduled for like an hour. I need like 15 minutes.
So yeah,
because it goes back a long time.
Yeah, a long time. I mean, just to be quick, I mean, it's I got started with I started a landscape business when I was 15 and kind of
in Boston.
In Boston, yeah, and scaled that.
We used to go to high school and go do jobs.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So like me and my brother, Troy. Steve? Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much everybody I knew at one point worked for me.
All parolees.
Yeah. Yeah. I was work release program, but like, yeah, no. So got started with that.
There needs to be a movie on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Oh, yeah.
For
sure.
Yeah. Some of the characters that worked
there. So got started with that, and then we'd have the downtime in the winter. So we just kind of like, I would get bored in the winter, and then like, we graduated high school and moved in together. We got an apartment, and like dead of winter, I think it was Troy that saw like some random like free seminar for real estate, on like some random infomercial, whatever. And we ended up we had an interest in it, right? Yeah. So we went to that.
This is back when you're like 19.
Oh, yeah. 18, 19, something like that. Yeah. And
January of 2012, we packed up and drove to California.
Yep. So like, and at the time, the seminar we were going to, everything that was like big was happening in Southern California. Mm-hmm. Like it was the place to be.
Foreclosure era.
So us being young and like, you know, we were like, well, we there's nothing keeping us here.
We've had other guys on the show, like they were picking up deals in Wisconsin out of like, foreclosure in like 2010.
Yeah,
we were 20 on California. We had asset managers from banks giving us the first call.
So we kind of dove in and like we went head first. And like we picked up like a month after we went to this thing and like drove out there.
So you just ditched the landscaping business that point?
No, so my brother stayed back.
Okay.
Right, to run that. And, you know, he was more of like lead sourcing, like finding deals from home.
So you guys just packed up U-Haul and a
Toyota Camry.
Toyota Camry, both into and just
which I told a month in.
Yeah.
Fell asleep at the wheel.
Yeah, we don't have time for that. So we kind of like, we went like head first and like we bought six properties the first year. And
that's a good story.
How many? Six?
We bought six properties the first year, and we actually did pretty well, like considering, meaning like we were buying like in the mid 200s. We were putting like $30,000-$40,000 into them and flipping them quick for like mid threes, right?
Yeah.
So we weren't doing great as far as like our margins weren't through the roof, but we were building a business. We were establishing like an investor network.
Yeah.
Like we were getting
learning
a ton. And then like, that's when like kind of the inexperience of knowing what your market was and kind of like the market tightened up. And then like all of a sudden, if you weren't buying like 50 to 100 properties on an REO list, like all at once, you were getting the absolute scraps.
Mm.
But what we did too, we were taking the same model of 35, 40,000, went and bought a house in Huntington Beach on the golf course, thinking we can only need to put 65 into it. And then it's like, oh shit, there's levels to this.
You
didn't know there was until you stopped realizing.
And you actually need to put like 200 into it or something? Or
400? Yeah, or like you can't rinse and repeat.
I made that mistake. I mean, again, we talk about that all the time on the show, how much I made the mistake of that, my multifamily. Learned the mistake.
Yeah. And like you can't like rinse and repeat like that. Like we would never be like the stuff we do now. We have to work with a designer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like you can't just like do the same cap.
It's not cookie cutter
at all. Like you can't like the system is like, it's, you know, you got to be able to know what, where you are, who your buyers are, what they're, yeah, what they're expecting. Mm. And we didn't know any of that.
And needless to say, that, yeah, business failed. So early, yeah, on. So that failed. Yeah. We went to Florida. I moved back to Boston, started picking up our own businesses. He built his construction business back up. I started getting into wholesaling. I started another development company doing condo gut renovations for like 400,000, 500,000. In the boroughs of Boston. And then we'd link back up. His construction company started doing some work for me and my previous partner. And then we're like, what are we doing? Let's just get back into this thing. So then we got back into it. And
how long were you guys in separate businesses then for?
Oh,
3 years, 4 years, five or ten?
Yeah,
10
years? Probably 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
But, you know, that time, though, is, I feel like we kind of, we didn't really know what our roles were in the first time around, meaning like we were all kind of like new to the business and like sorting out who was finding, who was funding, who was fixing. And then like after that like blew up, we basically kind of like really honed in on what we were good at, right? Where I was always like good with my hands. I was always a construction guy, but like I was in the first run through that business, I was the funding guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm, now he's the funding guy, mm-hmm, and I'm the construction guy. Mm-hmm. And like, so, you know, it allowed us to kind of refocus our attention on what we were good at. And you know, I started a construction business and I was in Florida doing it. I renovated a hotel. Like I kind of got like all this experience, yeah, in the construction world, and he was getting his experience like doing deals in Boston and, yeah, putting, you know, funding together. And so, and then when we revisited doing this again, we kind of, instead of being like brand new to the whole thing, we brought our expertise and our experience that we had learned to the table. So it was a lot more defined as to like, here's what I'm going to do. Yeah. Here's the value you're going to bring. Mm-hmm. And like, we don't really cross over.
Well, that's the hardest part about a partnership, yeah, which I'm sure you know, is like, the last thing you want to do is be giving 50% away to the same exact person.
Yeah, for
sure. So we're on two completely different spectrums. But we intertwine, obviously, because, mm-hmm, we're both running Avenue Capital Partners plus Treadstone Construction. So, like, I'm in on the design with our designer. You know, we're doing stuff with funding together. And then we're also both, you know, he's getting leads sent to him. But majority of our time is in our niche. Like, he's very good. Yeah. Him and Caitlin built all the SOPs, backhouse the systems and everything like that for the company, you know? So it's years and years. I mean, we're 14 years into this thing, you know what, yeah, I mean? Which sporadically, but now it's like, now we know where we are and like, we know the path we're on and the trajectory, but like you peel the onion back, man, it's been fucking chaos for 14
yeah,
years.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Because no one teaches you this.
No, yeah.
You have to like, in your experience,
it. Bootstrap,
yeah,
it. Grassroots.
You know? For sure.
Yeah. Like when you were just going to start giving boilers away for 30 grand.
Yeah. No, you know. Contractors before our VP of facilities was here, they'd be like, yeah, coming in, I got this problem, this heat won't work in this apartment. They're like, oh yeah, I need this with your boiler,
yeah,
like 35,000 or 30,000. I'm like, okay, can you do it for 25? The guy's, yeah, like, hell yeah, let's do, yeah, it for 25. Mm-hmm. I'm like, all right, well now Steve comes in here, Steve Seidhammer, my VP of facilities. And he's like, no, we don't need that. We just need that and that for $4,500. Yeah. Now we're rocking and rolling, right, and it's good. And so I'm like, oh my God, I can't tell you how many, you know, tens of, and that's why, you know, Steve's like, our VP of facilities, he brings so much value from that, sure, standpoint, yeah, you know? Yeah. Now there's other things that Steve's got to figure out and he knows it. And we got, you know, these gold units, if they're going to gold, they need to be 100% done 100% of the time. And we want to do them in 3 to 5 yeah, days.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So like, we still have like other stuff that we got to work out, but like, man, if we can work through that, look out, because now it's like, you know, on our regular maintenance programs, but then also the CapEx side, you know, we're rocking and rolling.
Well, that's like cruising. A perfect example of my father was our project manager. Now he's our project supervisor, because Luke now has brought someone in who's a true project manager out of Florida.
What's the difference? Does the supervisor oversee multiple managers, project manager?
No.
our supervisor, so this was actually a huge learning curve for me. Like in the construction field, like I was wearing all the hats, right? Meaning like, you know, Caitlin was the first like true administrative employee that I ever worked with, right? And I just knew as like, you know, I was burning at both ends. Like, you know, I'd be up at 5, I'd be on the job site, I'd be setting my guys up, like my field guys. And then like by the time I got home, I'd be doing the bookkeeping and payroll and all. And then like, you know, so I kind of like parceled it out as I was like, I need help. Like, and I'm great at the field stuff. But by the time I needed to parcel it out, right? Yeah. So bringing Caitlin on board, we really didn't have a role for her. It was just kind of like, I need help. Like, let's figure it out. Yeah, right. It, yeah. And she did a fantastic job, like just kind of being able to put what was in my brain on a spreadsheet and like start from there.
Yeah.
Right. And then we just kind of like literally just took it from there, like started delegating pieces of her position and more and more of mine. And so we have, you know, her, she's our COO now. But you know, the learning curve for me was I was envisioning like the project manager role was somebody that would do all the field work and all the scheduling of a particular project, like for all the subcontractors.
They would do all the field work. What do you mean by that?
No, like, meaning like the field overseeing, right? Okay. And like also like scheduling the next wave and like letting us know we need material.
Got it.
So, and then, you know, we scaled up and we bought like, what was it? Eight single families. Yeah. And it was like expecting him to be able to kind of manage all of those and like schedule the next thing. And it was like a pretty unreasonable ask. So like, then I was like, okay, like we need to redo this where it's like, we need somebody that is in the field, our supervisor that is literally just reporting the news.
Quality control,
reporting the news to the manager who's in the office, who's pulling the strings with the software and like, you know, basically identifying the next step. Here's where we need to be. Here's what's next on the docket and kind of setting the, like calling the plays for what needs to happen in the field.
So your dad moved from a project manager, Steve, to supervisor.
Yeah. Yes.
So he's the boots on the ground guy reporting back to the project manager.
Correct.
About what needs to happen and what's going on in the field. And again, quality control. And again, as you know this, I mean, how many times have you put someone in a position and it's you put them in the wrong position.
Yeah.
You know, that was the thing. It took us, we're running over timelines. We brought him on in 2023. We bought 8 properties in 2023. So February of 23, we sold the highest single family ever sold in Somerville, Massachusetts for $3.25 million, right?
Yeah.
And from there we scaled, we were just like, let's just go gung ho. Then we also bought 4 projects in Florida.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know what I mean? So we bought 12 assets in 2 different states. So we were ramping up on the development side, which we are also learning because that project we just sold, I did the design for it. Mm-hmm. Then we bring a designer on. So all of our SOPs were literally in the fire learning all this at the same time. Yeah. So we thought, again, that my father could handle all this. And then we're like, we're behind. But it wasn't his fault. It was our fault for putting him in a position to not be truly
successful. Did you think it was his fault for a little bit?
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. But then we're all sitting there because I'm telling him, I'm like, hey, man, we need to step in a little bit. But it's like, well, we don't want to overstep his role. It's like he needs to learn this. But now we realize after building those systems out, it's like now, for example, that 6,400 square foot project we're doing, we bought that September 27th of last year. It took us 3 months to get a permit. A year and a half ago, it would take us 6 months to get a permit.
Yeah.
So our SOPs expedited that timeline because now we know the process extremely well. And we're going to be done on the 11th month mark with this whole project.
Yeah.
From a 6,400 square foot two family that we're going to sell for $6+ million. And we're going to be done from permitting to hard renovation in under 12 months.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
For sure.
But that's because of, hey, recognizing the flaws in the system and then pivoting and putting the people in the right spot, you know?
And I like to think like, I mean, I've been drilling this into our project manager that it's like the overall like mission, right? Of like the goal is to have 0 days go by other than a Sunday that we have nothing happening at the property, meaning like we need to make progress every single day.
Yeah.
Right. Because they're so expensive to carry the interest.
So the project manager is more of at the office kind of will. So the field, the supervisor, what do you call it? Field supervisor?
Yep.
What's
your supervisor.
Yeah.
So he's on the ground saying, okay, this contractor's done with this. So tomorrow they can do a different project.
Yeah.
And then we're going to for sure need these guys lined up. It's looking like, or they're going to be wrapped up with this in 48 hours.
Yeah.
Now we're going to for sure need that other vendor. You know, we told him, hey, sometime this week, we're for sure going to need that vendor out here Friday morning. Is that what he's kind of doing? Then the project manager is reaching out to all those.
But I think more so the project manager is the one setting the schedules. And 100%. She's setting the schedule in the expectation of the timelines that we built. Hey, plumbing rough should take about 2.5 weeks.
Got it.
Following up with the plumber. Yeah. Hey, where are you with this?
Yep. Yeah.
But he's also in the field going, hey, this is done.
Got it.
Hey, we need to pivot here. We can't pull the slab yet in the basement because the underground plumbing's taking longer than anticipated.
Yeah. Yep.
So confirming the work that's been done, it's done correct.
Yep.
Seeing if there's anything that's been
and
missed.
Quality, and quality
and making sure, control, but also making sure that like the information that we are getting from the subcontractors is correct.
Yeah.
Like,
got it.
Like the project manager, like we're ready to schedule the rough plumbing. Okay, the rough plumbing is going to take 3 weeks, right? And periodic check-ins of like, are we still on pace for you to be done by Friday? Yes or no. And he says, yeah, we're going to be done by Friday. And then, like, our supervisor comes to, like, he hasn't even started yet. Yeah, he's not going to be done by Friday. Right, yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? So, like, it's more of, like, a checks and balances. For sure. Makes sense.
Yeah, and we still run into that, and we're a lot less construction, you know, it's a lot lighter construction.
But now, again, he has instead of having 24 things on his – on what he's supposed to need to do, now we shrunk that down. So now it's the one when I'm walking through a project, I'm like, what is this? Mm-hmm. It's like your quality control now. You know what I mean? So after we pivoted that, now it's like, hey, we're on your ass about specific things opposed to everything. So now like we've limited frustrations in the field with the team.
Yeah.
And it's running extremely smooth right now. But also, like, you know, there's going to be problems as we grow and someone else to take him in my position and Caitlin's so we could actually work on the business even more opposed to in it. Then there's still going to be times where you have to peel the onion back. Like, you know, you have to step in for the next, you know, few months. And it's like, we'll have to step in and change those systems. But no, we got it to a phenomenal.
And we also have a project administrator too, which is like her role. We parsed it out. Basically, she's like subcontractor relations. So like, she puts together the bid package. She'll push it out, get all bids. I review them, like, you know, negotiate with them, and kind of like, okay, we're gonna sign them up for this project, right? Mm-hmm. They're gonna do the drywall, right? Mm-hmm. And lock them in at a price, and then she collects their insurance. She deals with all the draw schedules. She deals with all of that, right? So, that was also removed, like, from her plate. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's really, like,
that's a lot in itself.
It is.
Yeah, putting the draws together. It's crucial. They're constantly putting draws together back
here. Yeah. You know, so we have, that's really the construction business when I first started, which is how a lot of construction businesses or smaller, like, GCs operate, whereas, like, every employee I had or everybody was, like, it was very field-oriented. Like, I had carpenters. I had, like, you know, I like, painters, handymen. Like, everybody that I employed was in the field, and the administrative side of it was, like, an afterthought. Yeah. Right? It was just a mess because I was, like, I was doing it whenever I had time.
Yeah.
You know, so we, like, revamped it, and we're, like, all right, like, we're going no field employees or very few field employees. And we're gonna go heavily in the administrative side of it to where everything is tracked, like, down to the cent. Like, we have, like, you know, we've put a ton of time and money into the Builder Trend software and like using that as more of, like, you know, the subcontractors that we bring in, it's really an easier way for us to kind of nail down our costs, right? Like, we have a locked in price as opposed to just running free.
Plus, the central hub, they go in there and they get notified. So they have all the construction docs.
Yeah.
They have the lighting plan. They have the frame plans. They have the permit set. So, like, for them, they have the design package in there. So they know each plumbing trim, the spec is going. So it's limiting those. Like, when you got on the call with Steve, and then you said, why is this guy at a stove in 2 weeks?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you got everyone on the phone. For them, we're limiting that delay because, guys, so, hey, where are we? What's the layout for this kitchen? Go in and build a trend
for
the subs. You have it right there. You don't ask us. It's updated. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But limiting those delays is – because, again, I mean, we're carrying for a specific project in Cambridge right now. Our carry on that's $990 a day.
Yeah.
So if we're a month behind schedule, you shit me, that's $30,000. And then if we don't hit our target projection and we sell for 30 less, that's $60,000 off the bottom line.
It's a big swing.
Massive swing.
With kind of small details. You know, you got to be tight with your target.
Yeah, but it takes you getting punched in the dick a few times. You know what I mean? Like, we got to tighten the ship up.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah, like you said, you start to, you like, there was definitely a huge benefit to us acquiring as many properties as we did, right, in such a short period of time, right? It allowed us to scale. But once you do that, you, like, now we're at the point, like, similar where you're at, where you start to identify that, like, okay, there's some waste here. And, like, we're leaving, like, we could do fewer deals with a higher margin if we just get more granular and better at what we do, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and that's kind of like we're in a similar stage of, like, all right, like, we've already, I'd say, the first, like, four or five projects, we were roughly around $260, $270, like, a square foot, right, for, like, a 3,000 to 4,000 square foot renovation. And, you know, we've been able to drive that cost down to about $210, $215, you know, and that's just based off of really just kind of, you know, building good relationships with subcontractors, but also getting better at nailing down what we're doing in advance and not doing things two and three times and changing things. And it's a process and it's never going to be perfect, but it's just getting getting better and more efficient at everything that we do, you know? So yeah, I mean, it's...
Well, you guys were talking about, like, what I shared at the mastermind so people can share. It's like, you know, in my company right now, I got $30 million of value that's just low-hanging fruit that we can unlock. And we're going to unlock it because of this lack of efficiency and just problems.
Mm-hmm.
And we've already unlocked, in like 4 weeks, we've already unlocked like $13, $15 million of that, like half of it. In the next 6 weeks, we're going to unlock the next $15 million.
Right.
And it's crazy how a company can get like that. And some people are like, well, how do you let your company get there? It's like, well, that just comes with scale, and you scale out, and then things get miscommunicated or not communicated at all. And you got to go back and, you know, what got you to what we were doing at, you know, 400 units doesn't work at 2000 units, you know? And it's the same thing for you guys, you know, and
you start to see some of that.
And the process has got to change a little bit. If they don't, then again, you're running efficiently, like you said. But now the good thing about that, though, is you can go back and trim some of that stuff up and then build off of it going forward.
Right.
Well, it comes down, like you said, to the operation, because I think in our world, you know, our career, we've been in a bull market the whole time, right? So this is the last 2 years has really been the down market. But I think everyone got, I think everyone's very fortunate, and everyone was a little naive in the development world, flipping property, because you could put, a monkey could have put a sign out front and it was selling over asking, right? So people weren't really, you know, oh, I made 12% on my money. I made a couple hundred grand on that deal.
Yeah.
But they're like, that's fine, right? Yeah. But then when you start drilling down the operations, like, well, you left another 180 on it because you didn't run it properly. Yeah. But it takes
you have to run it properly to get the normal margin.
Yeah. So it takes you to lose money or break even on a deal to be like, where did we go wrong? But I think, you know what I mean? So now there's a lot of guys that are out of the business now. You know, especially over last year, it's like, well, now your operations and systems weren't there. But in any successful business, as you know, and anyone in it knows, like, you don't get successful without systems.
Right.
In the proper operations and accounting for every following that peanut throughout the whole process and knowing where it is. So, but again, it takes you to lose. It takes you to not be satisfied with the return to understand where we need
to want to push through and to be able to know that you can push through to something greater.
Well, I think it's going to be a great transition for us when we do start getting into what you do.
Yeah.
Right. Because I think that the background with the team, especially Caitlin and Luke, is like operations. They thrive off it. Caitlin's in software and seeing that is massive for her, and she gets excited about it. So we'll be able to, like you said, to compress that time since we're doing it already in our current real estate niche. And then I think we'd be very successful when we start acquiring multifamily.
Right. For sure.
You know?
Yeah.
So we already have a good investor pool.
And the nice thing too about that is, like, logistically, if you get into multifamily again, you got like 36 units, you know, or 30 units or whatever, it's all in one site.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And multiple units.
But we also will be able to do the renovation as well.
Well, right.
So we need it as well.
You know? Yeah.
So that's definitely something we're excited about. And we, you know, we went
That's what I'm saying is, like, you might have, instead of like a $3 million project, you've got like a $40 million project. And instead of having to go to 18 sites for $40 million of projects, you got one site for $40 million.
Yeah. Yep.
Right. And that there's efficiencies to that too.
Yeah. And I think it's very hard for us to acquire, you know, especially over in the market where we're at, right? Because the economics are very tight in order to make the rentals pencil, you know what I mean?
For sure.
It's difficult for us, but you know, gotta make it happen though.
Yeah.
You know?
That's awesome. What do you think's next? What do you think the next 12 months, 18 months? You kind of talked about what you guys have been kind of trimming up and, you know, shoring up over the last, you know, 6, 12, 18, 24 months. Funny. What do you guys think? Where do you think you're heading
next? I was putting numbers together during your thing today about where we were. We went from 2023 acquiring about $11 million, and then 2024 we sold $15 million worth of real estate. And that was between 12 assets that we acquired in 23. Then in 24 we only bought 3 projects, and now we have 2 under agreement. So we scaled back, I mean, 75% on our acquisitions, but the projected profit on the 3 deals.
Yeah, by the way, I think that's pretty much everybody. I mean, there's a lot of people doing no transactions. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the jobs we have now and that we have under agreement, the projects and the 2 that we're buying this year, that projected revenue on that is like 4x of what the 12 projects we bought were, right? So that goes back to the quality of it. So we're looking at that to expand, one, the lead generation, and then take that capital to go buy. We definitely need to buy some stabilized assets this year. That's the next move for us. So constantly find deals that we're doing now, but being very selective about what we actually buy, and then transition into.
So and you want the multifamily to be stable already from day one, you're thinking?
No. I mean, like, I mean.
No, value add. Value add.
And then get it stabilized and hold it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes, exactly.
Sure,
reposition it to our favor to increase the yield on it, of course. 100%.
Yeah.
But buying in Massachusetts right now what the markets we're in, you can't buy a piece of land and build rentals. I don't know many people doing it unless it's at massive scale.
Yeah.
You know, but if you want to go build an 8-unit rental, just the cost of acquisition, the cost of construction, and then it's really not making sense economically.
Right.
So, but I think that's the next step though.
Yeah. And
we need cash flow.
For sure. I mean, that from, Yeah, I think that you know, we've been pretty hyper focused and on the systems for the construction business. And like I said, that's, you know, we were talking about this last night actually, but you know, I think we've been very good at hiring people and not resumes, to where like the culture of our company is excellent.
Yeah.
Right. And
so what are you doing first? What do you mean by you saying you're hiring people and not resumes? What do you mean by that, to get your culture excellent? What exactly do you mean by that?
Meaning like, I don't necessarily care about like the experience of like specifically what you're doing. Like, mm-hmm. our project manager that we just brought on, she has no construction experience, mm-hmm. right? Zero. Mm-hmm. But she was a project manager before, yeah. For banks and whatever. So she's understands of like what her role is, right? But there's a huge learning curve for what she's doing. But the more important thing is that, like, she's willing to learn. She wants to learn. She wants to be better. She treats the company like her own, right?
Yeah.
And same thing with Caitlin. Like, Caitlin is...
So the question, the first thing you're asking, is it the right person?
Is it the right person? Is that person a like, fit with us? Exactly. Yeah. Is this somebody I want to work with every day, right?
We've had that come through a lot lately about a lot of successful guys coming through about when they started hiring that way, it just turned into... Their company turned into something so much better than what it was.
Right.
Yeah, but like Patrick Bet-David talks about it a lot, like entrepreneur versus entrepreneur. Yeah. And Caitlin's definitely an entrepreneur in the sense of... where she feels like we treat her like as if she's an owner of this business on the executive team with us, and she's earned that spot, right?
Yeah.
But like, she doesn't need to be told to do. If something needs to get done in her mind, she's going to do it.
Yep.
The same way with our supervisor, my father, mm-hmm. on Sunday, without telling, he takes a 2-by off, he'll die, right? Yeah. But on Sundays, without telling anyone, he's at the job site preparing it because the rain's coming tomorrow, without telling anybody.
Yeah.
Yep.
And he's doing, you know, 14-hour days. Yep. That's every day though. So like, you can't find those people, really.
For sure.
Yeah. So when you have them, it's like, how do you preserve them?
Yeah.
And how do you ensure that they're happy and the team they're on?
Well, yeah, it's
and big. How do you reward people? You know, like, exactly. That's the thing with, like, with what we're going through right now. Is like, how, you know, we got certain people that weren't supposed to do showings on, like after hours or during the weekend. And I'm like, what? That's like when people that have jobs are looking potentially want to maybe look at
not
an apartment.
See an apartment.
Yeah. So you know, what we've kind of done is we've just thrown an incentive out there. Like, okay, for every lease, you know, after hours, we'll pay you an extra $250, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. So we've got different incentives out there at certain properties that we're struggling mm-hmm. with occupancy at to get caught up. And that's kind of how we signed 50 leases at this one property in 4 weeks, because we kind of threw some of those incentives out there, and people were like, all right, let's go get it. And we removed some red tape, and they were amped.
Yeah.
Like you were just talking about, they're amped to just put in the extra
time.
They
got to know what makes people tick, too. Yeah. You know what I mean?
You're probably getting a better tenant too.
Yeah.
Usually the tenant that's available Monday morning, 8 a.m. is probably not the best guy.
I guess we're going to find out, you know, like 6 months from now.
We'll see.
we'll follow up on that.
Definitely, for sure. But no, I mean, like Luke said, Luke's really spearheaded the hiring and bringing the people on, and he's done an excellent job at it.
When you guys went your separate ways in L.A. or after L.A., mm-hmm. did you guys have, was there a fallout, like a fight or anything, or not? Just like, it just didn't work?
Not a physical fight. I would have beat his ass, but there was...
maybe. Let's see.
It's just interesting to me. Like, I think it says a lot about you two, because I think a lot of people left that situation like pissed off and maybe never talked to each other again.
Yeah. We didn't talk for a few years. Right? Yeah. But we grew, we're on the same T-ball team together.
Right.
I mean, he's like my brother. We know each other.
But still, but even then, there's a lot of people that like, I mean, I know that they get in the business together, and if something goes wrong, point the fingers at each other, and like, you know, they're not talking to each other for like 2 or 3 years. It's like forever.
Yeah.
So I think it says a lot about you guys, right? You guys recognize, okay, you're doing your thing, I'm doing, like, and it's, I think it takes a little bit of, I don't know, you guys kind of remove the egos there a little bit and say, hey, this is stupid.
Yeah. But when we were young, too, obviously we both had egos. You know what I mean?
Where it's like, we all still do.
But I think that, you know, it wasn't like an easy, quick, like, hey, like, let's just give this another shot. No, like I mean, we talked for quite a while before we did it again. You know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't just like, you know, hey, we're over it. No, we've hashed out like what were the problems, like, mm-hmm. what happened, and, you know, like, so yeah, I mean, it's not like it wasn't easy, but like, you know, even when we weren't, like, you know, I still considered him like a family member of mine. Sure, so it wasn't like, you know, and it is rare to go into business with a friend, but like, you know, it's not,
and to make it work,
and to make it work. But I think we're always like blatantly like, you know, we have no problem. I have no problem telling him. It was like, you know, you're doing a shit job right now. Like, you know what I mean? Like you need to be better.
Yeah.
And likewise. So I think just that, being able to, to accept that and not, you know.
Well, it's funny. The first deal we did together when we got back, like a full deal from acquisition as a company, right, was 18 Summit Street.
Yeah.
And in full transparency, we bought that deal for $1.25 million, right? We put $550,000 into it. We sold it for $3.25 million in 9 months.
Yeah, yeah.
So we made $1,014,000 on that job, on that flip in 9 months.
Yeah.
So we looked at each other, we're like, that makes up for all the bullshit.
You know what I mean? Like we were owed one. Like, you know what I'm saying? One, like sure. You know,
And then we lost all that money last year.
You know
what I mean? But we built a phenomenal, we took all that money, we bought Airbnbs in Florida. We bought eight projects in Boston.
Yeah.
So we deployed and we scaled the team and we brought people on it. So you know what I mean? It was worth it.
So going forward, where do you think you go from here then? You bought the multifamily, right? Okay, that's on the target. That's on the agenda. You want to get multifamily. What else do you think? I mean, is it something that you're still going to be, like, how many single families do you guys think you're picking off? Do you think you'll stay like at a lesser number but try to hit more profit?
Yeah, I don't think it's the same thing as when we talk about unit count.
Yeah.
We don't have we need to buy 10 things this year. It's like when they come up.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and obviously, you know, one of the things we focus on, singles and doubles.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of the times, especially my mentor preaches to us all the time.
When you're saying that, so that the context for everyone listening, singles and doubles, like multiplying your equity.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. So if you know, like what is it, 5% of people in the Baseball Hall of Fame hit over 500 home runs?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Something.
So it's so in there, it's like singles and doubles compound in real estate.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I think a lot of times people try and make this business too sexy when it's like it's a slow wealth building game. Mm-hmm. And obviously the goal is to double and exponentially grow your equity.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you can lose so fast in this business, for sure. Especially in the world we're in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Our timelines are much shorter. We're raising a shitload of capital at very high interest.
Well, that's what we talk about a lot. Like, I'm always looking at a much overall grand scheme. I want our CapEx projects to get done as fast as possible, but I'm also investing on a long term with what you guys are doing. It's like, and so I have a long runway there. I have a lot of time, which means I can make some more mistakes. Mm, you guys on the shorter, the less time you have, like the less mistakes you can make and still have a very powerful project.
Yeah, and like a 12 to 18 month deal, like you're bound by the market.
Right.
That market dips. The market doesn't correct itself in 12 months.
No.
You know what I mean? It takes a few cycles for it to get back to where you want it to be. Well, so like we're betting big on that, which then it comes down to the quality of the deal opposed to the quantity.
Yeah.
So the quantity was a necessary evil to build a business and the SOPs. But now it's like, hey, we have that set up. Let's make some fucking money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But also the speed is the speed is important for many reasons. But, you know, when we're reviewing a deal, right, you know, we're basing it off of comps. The further we go away from those comps, the less and less relevant they are.
Right.
Right. So, like, the more we can compress
distance-wise, you're saying?
Or I'm saying like time-wise, time. Time-wise, right?
Got it.
So
got
like, you know, if we're looking at a house, okay, that we're going to acquire this single family and we think we can get this because the house, you know,
6 months ago,
six streets over, like 6 months ago sold for X, but you know, this project takes us 18 months. Like there could be four other things that are much closer that sell in that waiting period that could totally blow up the deal.
Yeah.
So like the sooner you get it done, the less of a risk of the market shifting, you know?
And you're just saving ROI, too, with speed.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, see, and you said before, Steve, too, like, this one project's $990 a day holding costs, right?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't necessarily think of my projects as far as holding costs per day because I'm backfilling these units as we're going with cash flow. So my cash flow is positive already plus increasing with each one we fill. With you guys, there's no cash flow. Like it's an empty single.
Yeah, you know, go to that project single, day, it's empty.
Yeah, I mean, right. It's like, single house. So there's nothing coming in. And so you know your cash burn every single day, like $990, seven days a week, 365.
And every draw schedule.
Until you get out.
It eats up more debt,
right? Because
the bank's giving us 100% construction.
Yeah.
So at the end of that project, we go on the market. We withdrew all of the construction funds, and the debt, the acquisition price is still fixed. It's still sitting there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So we're now carrying its full maturity on the capital for the debt, and not to mention our pref and our common with our investors at, you know, 16 to 20%.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so like that's...
Get behind the eight ball pretty quick.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. Yeah.
So and, you know, we learned that the hard way last year. Like, we never really anticipated, like... We were always viewing it as like, okay, as soon as the project's like it was just like once the project's finished, meaning like construction wise, and we list it and we have the, like, it's gone. Like you never really, like, we never had to anticipate like a 90 day days on market. Right. Mm-hmm. And like that was like
And that's what you started witnessing last year.
Yeah, like a rude awakening of like, it was like, we just got to get this thing done. And then you bought those deals when
things were still selling in two days on the market, right? So then 9 months later, it changes, the market changes, and all of a sudden it takes 45, 60, 90, 120 days to sell something.
Because when you talk about not being emotional, like the first deal that you ever bought, the big one, I think you're going to move it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for us, it's we have zero emotion about it. Our job is to turn these products, get them done to the best of our quality, turn them over as fast as possible so our investors can get a return and we can keep that retention and move on. So when we get an offer, we're not the type of guys like, oh, we should get 30 grand more. It's like, get this thing off the books.
Yeah, for sure.
Get our investors paid back. Yeah. Move on to the next one. There's zero emotion to it.
Yeah.
So when it's sitting there for 3 months on the market, it's like, give us anything. You know, it's like we're denying offers. It's just like in our luxury space, people who can afford $2.5 to $6 million, they don't need to buy. They don't need to move.
Right.
They want to move.
Yeah.
Right. So when you want to like, why is he buying? He's been back three times. They're not in a rush.
Yeah.
You know, so like that's one of the things that once we started getting into the high luxury product, it was like a wake up call where it's like we're used to people that, you know, early in our careers, $700,000, $600,000, $500,000 condo. Those people are sleeping on their mom's couch and they're like, shit, I could buy my first condo now. So like they're almost desperate and emotional about buying it. So
and also with 18 Summit Street, the one that we sold for 3.25, we literally had one open house. We had to cancel this. Like we had Saturday.
It was a bidding war.
A Saturday was the first open house. We had a bidding war and we had to remove it from the market on Sunday. It was like part of the
agreement. We listed it for 2699. Mm-hmm. They came in at 3.25 million.
Wow.
Yeah.
So the MVP of that
was. So what year was that? That was
2023.
Okay.
So we bought that in 22.
Yeah.
May of 22. And we executed that extremely fast. And we got an acquisition to close was 9 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Crazy.
So our investors had 20%. On their principal on that and interest. Plus they also had a 2.5% net profit share.
Mm-hmm.
Their total return in 9 months was like 67%. Which is like, you know, their 2.5% was $27,000.
Right.
On top of already the 20% interest they were making on the principal. So everyone was happy.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. But to kind of answer your question with like what's next is like, you know, I think we have a lot on the radar, but I think we are focusing on the lead generation. Like that's kind of our mission for this year. Like we want to perfect that and kind of build that out because it all kind of starts with that. But then I think like the next piece to it is really like doing a fair amount of research on starting a fund.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I was kind of asking you a fair amount about it. But it's like I got I went to a conference out in Phoenix and it was a lot of fund managers and every single one of them have some type of different style of fund that they're doing. But almost all of them were open funds.
Yeah.
Every single one of them.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, that's something that I think is on the radar for us.
Yeah.
But I think that the number one thing that I did notice with speaking to those guys is the amount of deals they were reviewing before they actually bought one.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like on average,
it's a lot. You go through a lot to buy one.
Yeah. The guys reviewing like 100 deals to buy one or two.
Yeah.
And like we're looking at it and I'm like,
you're like, shit, I just looked at one to buy one.
we see like seven deals and we buy four of them.
Well, you have dial back the courage. Yeah, I was talking about before, it takes a lot of courage. You got to dial back the courage. You guys got plenty of courage.
No shortage of that. Right. Yeah, risking it all.
But
that's
years.
Like, you know, and that is kind of like, I'm guilty of that. Like, I just love doing deals. Like, I love the construction.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
You know, so like, you know, I'm like, I just love putting out that product and I kind of get wrapped up in that.
For
where
sure.
It's like, you know, and I would love, obviously, that it's much better when everything makes money, but like still like to this day, like I don't really, you know, the making the money on the projects is just a measuring stick for like, is this business working? But like what I'm most proud of is like the systems that we've built and watching like it's working.
That's cool.
You know what I mean? Like it's cool to see. So
You guys have done a lot of good stuff and it's cool. I love following you guys' stuff online and thank you.
We'll be a little better though. We gotta stop posting.
I know you said that last time. Yeah. But keep doing it.
I'm gonna put one on just to do something.
It's hard to be consistent with content. So Jake, do you have the question from the last person? So what we kind of do at the end of the podcast is the previous guest will ask a question for the next guest and then you guys answer it and then you guys leave one question for the next guest that we have.
Okay.
What's that question?
All right, what is the biggest thing operationally that has helped you expand your business?
I mean, we touched on a lot of that, actually.
Yeah. Like crazy. The whole podcast was about operations.
Yeah. So if you had to pick one, just to sum it up, we don't need to get list a couple sentences.
The biggest thing operationally, I would say, honestly, I think it's tracking the expenses in a like really not just like the figuring out, hey, you put $700,000 into the project. No, like specifically down to the freaking cent, like. Where?
Yeah.
What item? Like and plumbing. Why?
Exactly. Well, look at framing. Yeah. Down. He has all of the MEPs and everything down to a square foot. Framing on this job is going to cost us $2.13 a square foot. Yeah, yeah.
Like you know I track all of our projects, right? So that I can kind of and every single one of them is tracked and then kind of like grouped in. So we have an average spent on every single project, that's right? Awesome. Yeah. So, and then I also keep them so it's like when we're buying a project, right? Like similar to that one, like Brenna's doing on Rice Street, it's like, oh wow, this is like just like the project we did on Endicott Street. Like this is like the exact freaking floor print, everything's the same. Like I know exactly what this is gonna cost us. Like this
it's
is gonna
like what I do with all my projects where I know okay I got different types of projects whether apartments, townhomes, whatever how old they are. Yeah. So that way when I go underwrite my other deal, I'm like, oh, this is just like the other project, and we know all of our costs there. This is how much it's gonna cost us to operate. Yeah. Now my underwriting is that much more accurate.
But think about the speed of that too, because everyone's especially where we are, the density. Everyone's looking at the same deals
for sure.
Yeah.
So it's like
so you can put your numbers there that much faster and get a good deal.
We have the sheet. We put the square footage at the top of the sheet.
Exactly what I was talking about.
It's gonna spill out if we know. Yeah. Based off that number output, we're not going to spend more than that.
Right.
But if it pencils out at 800 and 4,000, we know we can get that down to 730, 725. Yeah. But like that's just an extra cherry.
That makes sense.
But being able to see that, right, I think is crucial because like a lot of developers that are just like looking at the bottom line of what they spend.
Yeah.
Where they get hurt is they don't realize how much money they're spending until like the last 60 days of the project.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it's like what hurts the most. Oh, it's like the finishes and it's the final touches. And it's like, no, we're ahead of that. Like I know if we spend an extra 10% on plumbing on this project of like, I'll know that in advance. So it's like, oh, like we got to get a little lean on something in this budget if we need to hit this number. So I'd say operationally, like, like being able to actively track all of our expenses in real time is like definitely from a construction standpoint has perfected it and like the efficiency
and being able
to nail our costs.
That's a good question for you and a great answer. What since he answered that question, Steve, what's the question you got for the next guest?
If you were to lose it all today, one, do you have the determination to build it back up? Two, how long would it take you to build it back up?
Ah, that's a good question.
I like that. It starts with a yes or no and then how long would it? I think whoever we have is going to say, yes, I could build it back up. So it's going to be interesting how they...
Well, if they say no, just kick them out. Like, you're not built for this.
If you say no, you don't get to answer the second part of this question.
Yeah. So I'm just going to go get a W-2. Yeah. You know what I mean? So
awesome, guys. Well, I wish I could sit here and talk to you guys forever. So at some point, we'll have to get you back on the podcast to see what the trajectory is like and what you guys are up to and whatnot. Luke and Steve, appreciate it, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys, for listening. Appreciate it.
Thank you.